Willkommen beim Juggle Hub Podcast. Im Juggle Hub kommen Menschen mit ganz unterschiedlichen Talenten und Geschichten und in unterschiedlichen Lebensphasen zusammen. Menschen mit Kindern und ohne, Ur-Berlinerinnen und Zugezogene, Menschen aus dem Kiez und Remote Worker vom anderen Ende der Stadt oder vom anderen Ende der Welt. Menschen auf der Durchreise und solche, die im Hub nicht nur ihren Arbeitsplatz, sondern ihr zweites Zuhause gefunden haben, die fester Teil der Juggle Community sind und den Space mitgestalten. In unserem Podcast stellen wir sie euch vor, sprechen mit ihnen über ihre Arbeit, über ihr Leben, über ihre Pläne und natürlich über Kaffee. Welcome to the Juggle! Welcome back, everybody, to the Juggle Hub podcast, A Coffee With. This is our sixth episode. After a bit of a summer break, our last episode was for our fifth anniversary here at Juggle Hub with Katya, where Katya and I were interviewed, actually. And after that, I guess we all just needed a bit of a break and had to reconvene. And now it's September and things are really starting to pick up again here at Juggle Hub. Lots of new customers, new community members. And so I think it's a perfect time to kind of look back a little bit and talk to actually one of our first members, if not actually the first member that we had. And such an unusual candidate at that, because how many co-working spaces can claim an American conductor as part of their community? So welcome, Garrett. My guest is Garrett Keast from Texas, Houston, Texas. And he's going to tell us a little bit about, about his story, about what led him to Berlin and to Juggle Hub. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Sylvia. Well, good. Good to be here. Good to be here. It's fun. Yeah, it's been 5 years and 3 months or 4 months, something like that. When we met, I mean, I remember meeting you and Katya like the first couple weeks of existence of this.
In an empty Juggle Hub.
Yeah, right.
Waiting for people to come in.
You were decorating it and things. It was great. I was actually looking for a place. So it was so timely for me. And with the little boy, our first little boy, Oliver, was born and we just lived across the street. And I needed a place where I could work quietly away from family and kids and diversions at home, of course. So it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Even as a conductor, even as a musician, there's no piano here, but I do have a piano at home so I can work with a piano.
We're working on it.
So, I remember when I found out that I could get a key, you know, I paid a little different amount to have the ability to have a key so I could come on the weekends or late at night. I was like, oh, this is best.
And you were always here over the whenever I came on the weekend, you were here practicing your music.
Yeah, studying music or writing emails or
just
like what's interesting about being a musician is that you always have like just regular business to attend to as well. Like emails with your agents and talking to orchestra managers and friends.
All the stuff you don't see when you're on stage.
I think to be a successful musician for anybody, it's like half his business. And you have to, and I always think you have to, I think the same for you guys, you know, you have to just be up for that.
It's funny, you know, when everybody's like on their laptops and everything, but you have these enormous
scores
that you're practicing, and it's so funny to see. And you know, whenever people ask us like, so what kind of people work at Juggle Hub, and you're always one of the first people we name because it's just so interesting, you know. Yeah, a conductor is not someone that you usually meet in a co-working space.
I guess not.
But tell us a little bit more about, you know, your backstory. Like, so you're from Texas.
Well, I grew up in Houston.
Yeah.
I grew up in Houston, but I had a long time in New York City before I came to Germany, before I came to Berlin. But yeah, I grew up I grew up in Houston, Texas. It's a big city. It's the fourth largest city in the United States. And I was just kind of always, from a very young age, really interested in music.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of my fourth grade year in elementary school, I remember the two music class teachers pulled me aside after the end of the last day of school and pulled me aside and said, Garrett, we want to talk to you about something here. next year, in December, we're going to do a little musical. Everybody's going to sing in it, and it's going to have a small little orchestra, and it was a Christmas-themed musical. And we need one singer to be the lead in the musical, and we thought we would ask you if you wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think I was really quite shy back then compared to now. And I was...
You? Shy?
Yeah, I know. And I was very excited about the idea. I said, sure, I like the idea. And then I remember saying to them, but why me? And they said, well, the reason is because you love music the most.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Fourth grade.
Into fourth grade.
But what made you decide to become a conductor? Because usually, you know, you as a kid, you play an instrument, you're part of the band or the orchestra, you know. But being a conductor is like something that you don't dream of as a kid, I'm sure, right? But what led you to that career path?
The very first thing was just I love music, so I was singing as a youngster, and then I knew I wanted to play an instrument. Mm-hmm. And so I remember I was going to play the violin, but then I went to some college football game at a big stadium, and I saw the trombones playing, and I said, well, that looks like more fun than the violin. So I wanted to play the trombone because they had the slide, mm-hmm. you know, and this glissandi and things like this. You could make all these sounds and effects. And so I decided to play the trombone. And I remember that in sixth grade, I recognized the band director's job as something I was interested in.
Yeah.
I was just like, wow, that's a cool job. I would like to do that.
Be the boss.
Yeah.
Conductors kind of be like being the boss.
A little bit.
You get to boss everybody around.
I don't know. Yeah. Yes and no. I mean, it's funny these days. I must say, like, when you go conduct an orchestra, and I'm usually a guest conductor, you know. Mm. Usually you go somewhere, you're a guest conductor, and... you're kind of like the guest boss, artistic boss. So you have to be, it's very diplomatic relationship you have. Yeah.
And so, okay, so you later you were in New York and you had several very interesting jobs there. You were in the NYC Opera as an associate conductor, and you were the resident conductor of the Queen's Symphony Orchestra, I think. And you said there were many other jobs that you had there. But then you decided, you and your wife, Megan, you decided to move to Germany in 2011. Why did you decide to basically leave home and come abroad?
I started looking at the idea around 2008 because I knew a gentleman named Craig Urquhart who works for the Bernstein office, Leonard Bernstein office. Mm. He used to be Bernstein's assistant the last several years of his life. And he knew lots of really important people, and he's a really nice guy, and we got along very well. And I remember calling him. It was good. I was doing well in New York and such. I was conducting, like, you know, the Brooklyn Philharmonic, and it goes to places like the Oregon Symphony or Syracuse Symphony or like New Jersey Symphony Orchestra. But I was often having to do like the education concert series or the summer pops concert series. Occasionally a more serious concert, like I did some concert with Brooklyn Philharmonic in the Central Park and stuff. But it was like I realized I need to find a way to break out of this and move to a higher level and start working like bigger and more important venues and dates and with better, more important orchestras. Mm. And I was like, how am I going to break free of this kind of box I'm in? Mm. And I think it was partially because I was an American. I was an American in America.
Yeah, so you were one of many.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah, in a certain sense.
Yeah.
And so I thought if I went to Europe, maybe there's a way forward and I could be free of this a bit. Mm. And so I went for that and I started working with Craig. Craig, I started paying a consultancy fee to basically every month. And he was super. He helped introduce me to lots and lots of people. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, he was like, you know, just see how I would do. He kind of tested me, I think. And then he'd say, well, maybe I can introduce him to a little higher level people, you know, and did that kind of thing. And I would go to Europe like two or three times a year on my own dime.
And this was all between like 2008 and 2011.
Like 9, 10 mostly. Mm-hmm. And I came to Germany always and sometimes to London or Amsterdam. And I just did a lot of networking. And he helped me set up meetings. And I wrote to a lot of people and had meetings. And eventually things started to break. Mm-hmm. So one of the cool stories was my European debut in a concert setting was I came to Berlin to conduct at the Komische Oper. I had an audition. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I was going to go do some more networking. And I went to... Amsterdam, and then I went to London. And I remember in Amsterdam, I had a new agent I started working with there, Martin Jacobus, and he was a really nice guy. And it was exciting because I had my very first agent in Europe. And then I went on to London to do some networking. And then it was suddenly the ash cloud from Iceland, 2010, you know, 11 years ago, April of 2010. And it was, do you remember that ash cloud?
Yeah.
It was crazy. Like there was no flights could move around Europe suddenly. Everything was shut down. I was supposed to fly back like the next day to New York or something from London, but I couldn't get a flight. And, mm-hmm. And then I saw there were still flights moving from Paris. So I took one of the last chances I could take the train over to Paris. And then I got stuck in Paris because mm-hmm. the planes were going either back to New York. And so then I started thinking creatively, well, gosh, I got to do something. And I started hearing that lots of orchestras couldn't get conductors because they couldn't fly in from Asia or from the States or wherever. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to just I sent a text message to that new agent of mine. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, Martine, just so you know, I'm stuck in Paris, you know, ash cloud. It was good to see you last week. You know, if you hear of an orchestra that's looking for a conductor on the continent that needs somebody to jump in, I'm really interested in that.
Yeah.
And so that was like, I remember like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, one afternoon. And then 3 hours later, he called me. I was in the metro underground. And luckily, the signal worked. And he asked me if I could jump in with the North Netherlands Symphony Orchestra 2 days later. Uh-huh. He asked me if I knew the program. And I did know most of it.
Yeah.
And
so in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had my first two concerts with them, like on a mini tour. And so I just took it over. And,
wow.
Yeah, it was great. So that was my debut, and it was a jump in an ash cloud event. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, it's just kind of things like that worked out. And then, I mean, the other thing that worked out 2 years later, I got my debut at the Paris Opera. Mm-hmm. And because of other things.
So these were like the kind of things you were looking for, something like bigger and more exclusive. And, and you kind of found that.
Yeah,
and
more major opportunities to really see. And also, I think what I try to tell people nowadays, young singers, young conductors, or soloists, is like, it's often in our business, it's good to be a foreigner. Mm-hmm. It's good to be, it can be really good to be a foreigner. Mm-hmm. Germany is, in a certain way, very open-minded to foreign artists, mm-hmm. I would say.
I guess, I mean, it makes a good headline too, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
Somehow.
Well, American conductor
jumps
in with the North Netherlands Symphony Orchestra.
It's attractive somehow.
Yeah, I guess. Let's hope.
And so you moved here, and I remember you were always traveling. You were always going places and had concerts that you were conducting. And the ongoing theme of the last 2 years, obviously, is Corona, and that affected you quite severely. I remember you were in
Stockholm
last year, right? When this started happening.
It all fell apart. Yeah.
Yeah. And then your concerts were canceled. So you were kind of stuck in Berlin and had to kind of reassess and rethink how you wanted to move forward.
Yeah. I took it as that opportunity. So everything was canceled. I was supposed to conduct, I think, 10 performances at the opera in Stockholm, and then, you know,
all gone.
Sent you home.
Yeah.
It was nice. Some places decided to pay you 10 or 20% of the contract that was canceled. And thankfully, I must say, I'm really glad that Stockholm and Toulouse, maybe Helsinki's going to come back into my schedule now. Mm. So there's a couple big things that happened for next season. Mm. So, but it was a crazy time. I mean, we all remember those moments when you were like, oh my gosh, how does this work? I have to wear a mask.
But I know you had time to really think about what you wanted to be doing and to kind of, you know, rethink, and you've actually done something with that. You created something new. Do you want to tell us about that a little bit?
Sure. Well, I mean, what was amazing is that I remember that back room just around the corner here. Mm-hmm. That was mine for like a month or two. Like, nobody went back there. It was like only three or four of us at all working in the jungle for like April and May, maybe part of June. And then it started to kind of open back up a little bit. And it was great. I found that time amazing because I still have very fond memories of that time because I had all this free time. Mm-hmm. One of the things I'm crazy about in this year, 2021, is 50 years since the death of Igor Stravinsky, mm-hmm. the great Russian, mm-hmm. French-American composer. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was Russian, born in Russia, of course. Mm-hmm. He wrote the great, amazing, I almost consider them French ballets, you know, first was Firebird, then Petrushka, then Le Sacre de Printemps, The Rite of Spring, mm-hmm. like super, super famous ballets that were premiered in Paris. And then he worked through the war in Europe and Switzerland and France, and then he went to the United States. And so Stravinsky lived for 34 years in the U.S., mostly in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and he composed a tremendous amount of music in the U.S. too. Mm-hmm. A lot of things were premiered there. So that's been kind of one of my focuses, Stravinsky, this year.
Yeah. But, you know, I know you are currently on the verge of bringing out you've started something new. You've created a new group and a new project.
Yeah, right. It's hard to keep up with so many things happening to me right now. But it's really good. It's really great. I mean...
what's it called, though?
It's called the Berlin Academy of American Music.
Yeah.
And it's a new professional orchestra based here in Berlin.
Yeah.
It's kind of a project orchestra. I think we'll be probably doing 4 to 5 projects a year.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're doing the first concert series here in Berlin, mm-hmm. 2 concerts.
In the fall, right?
In November.
Yeah.
November 13 and 15. And it'll be our first concerts ever.
Yeah.
And it's also around our release of our CD that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great CD coming out with Onyx Classics that features 2 amazing artists, Stathis Karapanos, this young Greek flutist,
mm-hmm.
and Chen Reis, the amazing Israeli soprano.
Mm-hmm. What's the CD called?
It's called Transatlantic.
I was going to place it here a little bit.
Yeah, right.
Transatlantic, how fitting.
Yeah, it's all about these, you know, it features Stravinsky, Aaron Copland, Takemitsu, Avner Dorman, Israeli-American composer, and Craig Urquhart, my friend I told you about that introduced me to so many people.
Yeah.
And they're all either American composers or American-focused composers, mm-hmm. or like mm-hmm. Israeli-American, or Takemitsu wrote a piece that's focused around an American theme.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it is kind of transatlantic in a way, you know?
Yeah.
Connecting to Europe and to us as all of us performing.
Yeah.
It's a very international orchestra, like mixed international, mixed nationalities, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It sounds really exciting, and I'm really looking forward to it. And I think it's just so, I've had these kind of conversations with many people during the past months, you know, people that through the lockdown and through the time and space, first it was a challenge. First it was like, okay, you know, you go from 100 to zero and really have to figure out what you can do, what you should do, you know, what you have to do. And of course, often with the constraints of finances, because people weren't making money, especially in the artist scene. But to kind of use that time and that space to come up with something new and to really hone in on what you want to be doing, because all that noise is gone, all that stress and all that, you know, you're always running from one gig to the next, but now you actually had time to come up with something new. And it sounds like it's really a passion project for you.
Thank you. Yeah, that's right. It really is. It really is. That.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to it. And we'll put any links that we can get from you into the show notes. And
yeah, please. Yeah, great.
And hopefully we'll have lots of our listeners that will come to your concert. I know I will.
Yeah, well, you can already hear some clips. We have a SoundCloud. We have 6 or so SoundCloud links on our website. It's easy to find.
And the website is also Berlin Academy for American Music.
Yeah, it's actually, you have to spell it all out. Berlin Academy of American Music.
Of American Music.com. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you, Garrett. Any last words? Oh, I know. We have to ask you the question. How do you drink your coffee?
Oh, what? I just take a cappuccino. No sugar, please, you know?
And any last words for our listeners?
Well, I mean, I just have to say thank you to you and Katya. This great place exists because I really feel part of the family here. And,
you are.
And it really feels that way. And it's been super helpful.
Wouldn't want to miss you. So thanks for being here and all the best with your new project.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Bye, everybody.